Hey guys, welcome to Restaurant Talk, the podcast where we get real about the wins, the struggles, and everything in between when it comes to running a restaurant. I'm your host, Susan Tung, restaurant owner, industry advocate, and someone who's been in the trenches just like you. This show is all about honest conversations that help you work smarter, not harder. We'll dive into stories from operators, share practical tips, and explore tools that can make your restaurant more profitable and sustainable. Restaurant Talk is proudly produced by Save Fry Oil, the team behind Frylo, a game-changing Japanese ceramic technology that helps you cut your oil use by up to 50%. You can fry at lower temperatures and plate lighter, crispier food, all without extra labor or complicated equipment. If you're tired of wasting time, money, or oil, you are in the right place. Let's get into it. So today I'm here with Jay from No One. Hi, Jay. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super excited to chat with you one-on-one and learn more about your business and kind of what's going on. So you're based out of New York, right?
Yeah, New York City.
New York City, right in the heart of everything.
That's right.
Amazing. Tell us a little bit about the business.
So I own a concept called No One. It's the name of my hometown in Seoul, South Korea. Korean-American restaurant. We basically do Korean takes, or we add Korean flavors to American classics like burgers, fried chicken, things like that. I currently have three locations. First location's in East Village, Manhattan. Second one was in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And third is now in Boston Seaport. So it's been a fun ride so far.
When did you start the original location?
I started the first one. I opened 3.5 months before COVID in New York City.
Okay. So like myself, you kind of started off, just before everything got really crazy. And now you have three locations. So that's such a huge success story. And, you know, a lot of restaurants were closing, but you're over here just opening more up. What do you feel like contributed to your success of being able to expand?
Well, I'm a chef by trade. So I've been cooking, in kitchens, since 2007. And my dream for all line cooks, I'm sure it's the same for every line cook in the world, your dream is to open up your own restaurant. And when I opened my first restaurant, now what? Now I need another goal to keep me going, because I found myself in a state of complacency, got a little comfortable. Like I thought I was the man, you know what I mean? And I was like, what am I doing? Like, I can't get comfortable. I can't get complacent. I need to chase after challenges. So then I decided to hire a manager or promote someone from within. That way I'm not the person running the business day to day. And once I saw that and I was able to see the restaurant kind of sustain itself, then I said, okay, let me go out and start looking for a second restaurant. But the true moment for me was when I went on my first vacation with my my fiance, my wife, who was my, you know, we were engaged then. We went to Jamaica on like a 7-day resort vacation, first one ever. And I said, if I don't get any emails, I don't get any messages, and I come back and the restaurant didn't burn down, I'm gonna go out and start looking for a second location. And that's exactly what I did.
That's amazing. So then, first one, kind of just before COVID, what was the timeline for the second one?
Second one, I opened 2 years ago, so 2023. So it took 3.5 years or so to open up a second one.
And then third location was pretty recently, I think I saw from Instagram.
Yeah. Third location, we opened April this year, so 3 months ago.
Okay. So that timeline is starting to like shrink a little bit. So, you know, maybe a fourth location in like a year now.
Maybe, yeah.
So the concept, based on what you've kind of described, is the concept revolved around yourself? Can you tell me a little bit about what was the inspiration there?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm Korean, and I'm also an immigrant. So I moved to New York when I was 8 years old. So I grew up eating Korean food, and that was my comfort food. But once I discovered food in New York City, you know, it's a melting pot. And when I had the chance to create my own concept for my restaurant, I thought to myself, and I've never worked in a Korean restaurant in my life. It was always like French, American, Italian, American, Japanese, you know, things like that. But I said, you know, I have to cook something that's true to me. And although I've never worked in a Korean restaurant, I know Korean flavors. And I felt at the time that like the middle tier Korean concepts, like there's high end Korean restaurants, Michelin star tasting menus, or there's like the hole in the wall, like traditional restaurants. But what about in between? I saw this void, and I'm like, man, there's an opportunity there. That's what I wanted to do. So that's exactly what I did. Something that was approachable, creative, fun, playful, that bridged the gap, New York and Korea, the way I see it. And I thought it was a fun concept. So, and it's not like a, we tap into nostalgia. That's my thing. So we play hip hop from, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. It's dimly lit. I want to capture a moment for everyone that comes in. They experience no one. They're like, wow, you don't have to be Korean, but you'll resonate with some part of the restaurant.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you describe a few menu items? Like what are we talking here? We're blending flavors together. Yeah. And
I'll give you a few. First one, or the best example, would be our chopped cheese rice cakes. So we make tteokbokki, which is a Korean street food, but I flavor it like a chopped cheese sandwich from New York City, from Harlem. So for me, it was like street food in Korea, to me, was like tteokbokki or rice cake served in this sweet, sweet and spicy red sauce. That's literally sold in the street, so that's our street food. But I wanted to present it in a way where the flavors were, flavors for people that taste it, it tastes like home, tastes like New York City. But the texture of it is so different. Like rice cakes, what the heck is this? Rice cake, isn't cake supposed to be sweet? No, it's like a gnocchi, you know, it's chewy, it's crispy on the outside, it's chewy, it's fun, and it's gluten-free. So that's one example. Another example is we're known for our burgers. We do a double smash burger, but we add roasted kimchi in it, homemade with kimchi special sauce. And we've won a lot of like burger competitions with this burger.
Well, that's so awesome. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like Korean flavors are top tier and everyone loves a burger. So it's like, you're taking winning aspects of different cultures and, you know, marrying them together. Would you say a lot of your menu is spicy?
I can't even eat spicy food. My food, I would say, is like...
What kind of Korean are you?
Yeah, I'm more American now, it seems like. It's not that spicy. No, it's like it's spiced, but it's not spicy.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because you mentioned approachable. So I was kind of curious about, that spice element. Often, like, so I have a Vietnamese restaurant, and when people come in that have never been here before, they're like, that's the first thing they assume. Is everything spicy? It's like literally nothing is spicy unless you ask for it to be. So that's a very common misconception. In where you grew up, were you kind of like the only Asian kid? What was that like?
Yeah, I was probably one of the two Asian kids when I first moved to New York. I moved to Jamaica, Queens, which was like mostly African-American, Indian-American. And I was in third grade. I remember this. And I don't speak English. I just moved here. My teacher, her name is Mrs. Black, but she's a brunette. But I thought black people were black, right? But her name is Mrs. Black, so I'm so confused as a kid. And I don't speak English, and my teacher wanted me to talk to another student or have someone translate for me or translate to me. So she brought another student, a girl, one grade above me. She came up to me, and she started speaking to me in Mandarin. And I had no idea what was going on. So I just stood there like saying in silence. And I don't even know if Mrs. Black knew that I didn't speak that language. I don't know. Maybe she thought that I was just like, you know, not...
They're all the same.
Yeah, like, I just don't... I don't want to talk to anybody, you know. I don't know. So it
That's
was
amazing. Probably, they're like, maybe they thought you were just like deaf.
Yeah, seriously.
Maybe he can't hear.
Yeah, so it was a culture shock, you know, because I came in Korea. I was the vice president of my class. Like, I was actually pretty popular. To now in Jamaica, Queens, I have no friends. I don't speak the language. I'm just trying to fit in or find a way to fit in.
And how did food? Did you find that you had like any lunchbox trauma? Did you ever have any of those kind of issues?
I didn't pack any food to school. I just remember like eating school lunches, you know, like eating sloppy joe for the first time with like a carton of like chocolate milk, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, no trauma there.
That's good. I will admit, I actually didn't have a PB&J sandwich till I was like 18.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, like, you know.
Did you like it?
When you're no.
Yeah.
I was like, no,
you're probably like, what is this?
Yeah, like, you know, my parents would normally send me with like a thermos with like rice and like Chinese sausage and like that kind of stuff. So then my classmates are eating like processed cheese sandwiches with like ham. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, that doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
So back to the restaurant, like, what would you say is kind of like your biggest challenge right now?
The biggest challenge right now is I've never operated two restaurants ever in my life. This is the first time, right? So just trying to see how I can operate it lean and mean. Lean and mean. That's the game right now, because we're also down year over year. Our revenue's down. Across the board, I think most restaurants are going through mm-hmm. this.
Yep.
And outdoor dining is we've lost 4 months out of the season for outdoor dining because a new dining out program launched this year. So we couldn't have outdoor dining from late November to early April. So we lost 4 months of revenue for outdoor seating. The past like 2-3 years, we were able to have outdoor structure like year round, and even when it was winter, we kind of enclosed it with some heaters, so we were able to see guests out there. But not this year. So we lost seating, we lost revenue, people are spending less, people are coming out less. So now I gotta operate in a way. It's a business at the end, right? You're not doing this just to like pass time. Like you're trying to make money. You have to profit. So I'm figuring out how I can step in. Right now, I'm in this transitional phase. I'm like, all right. Because I wasn't in the business in a long time, in probably like three plus years. You know, I would pop in for meetings and stuff like that, but I never like expoed or, you know, things like that. What kind of Asian am I? That's pretty bad, right? I think all my family members are like, what are you doing, right? So...
Don't you have to work?
Yeah. But now, my executive chef, who I just promoted, he quit last week because he had a family issue. So he had to leave. He had to just leave all of a sudden. I'm like, I'm not going to hire someone like desperately. I'm just going to fill in the role and I'm going to kind of assess the situation where that's at. And no one knows the food better than I do. No one knows the kitchens better than I do. No one knows what I want better than I do. So, you know, I'm stepping in more. Last week, like, I went into the restaurant expo couple of days, like, till late at night. And the team that I have in the kitchen, most of them don't even, you know, they know of me. They, you know, we've said hello to each other, but they never work with me. So I think it's great. Like, they're understanding, like, you know, I'm tweaking things on the fly and, you know, there's no checks and balances. It's like, all right, let's just change it right now. That's what we're doing, you know? So it's great. So the challenge is, how can I continue to push forward, work lean and mean without overworking myself, keeping the morale high amongst all the team members, and add and increase our bottom line? That's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, with the US, there's so much going on, right? Because I'm in Canada, like, you know, we're watching from up here and it seems like every week there's a new headline about some policy or, you know, I with like all the things you're hearing about ICE right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's be real. Kitchens are fueled by immigrant labor. Right. So do you have any concerns with kind of the political climate as well?
I do. And you know, most of my staff are immigrants, right? Most of them are. And, you know, it's my job to keep people employed and give them enough hours, you know, make sure that they're happy and they're, you know, coming into work content. And they're able to walk away with a paycheck that they're happy with, right? So I'm focused a lot on the things that I could control. Because a lot of these things, like, a lot of them's out of our hands. You know, it's things we can control. And, you know, the whole tariff situation, too. There's a local news reporter that reached out to me. He's like, Chef Jay, can I talk to you tomorrow? I'm talking to a lot of, like, you know, chef owners, chef operators in New York City. And everyone's, like, stocking up on sriracha, like, stocking up on whatever. Can I interview you to see what you're doing, what measures you're taking? And I'm like, I'm not taking any measures. I'm just, what am I, you know, what we're going to, I said, we went through COVID. If I went through COVID and I have three restaurants right now, we're going to be okay. Like, no matter what comes, you can't freak out. You got to just make the best decisions. Don't react, respond, but don't react. And make calm, cool, collected decisions. So, yeah, that's my take on it right now.
I don't think panic buying has ever really helped anyone, because at the end of the day, right? Like, what are you going to do? Have shipping containers full of sriracha in your backyard? Like, it's not a solution, right? And I totally agree with you. Having grown my business through COVID, it's like, for restaurant owners, this is just another challenge. It's another hoop we have to jump through.
That's it.
Something you said that really stood out to me was you want people to take home a paycheck they're happy with. As someone that comes from back of house, right, you understand the inequities and the challenges there. Can you tell me a little bit about your philosophy on, you know, what do you do differently with your back of house? Or how do you make sure you kind of take care of your people beyond that?
You know, taking care of the people means you got to take care of the business first, right? And my managers and I, we clash a lot on this, but I strongly, strongly believe this is my main principle. Not every people that's on your team are A players. Maybe skills wise, like, sure, they're not A players, but I'm even talking about mentally. Are they in it? Are they really committed to the restaurant? Not everyone's equal. Some people are just in just to get a paycheck, right? Sure, some people are going to be like that. Let's say a business is slowing down a little bit and you have to, you know, shave some hours off people. Who are you going to shave hours from? To me, my A players, the people that always show up, always on time, rarely call out. When I call them, when we're in a desperate need, they say yes. They're, you know, if we're extra busy, they don't mind staying a little longer. It's those players that I want to make sure that maintain all their hours. And everyone else, their hours are going to get shaved a little bit. I want my main team members that are committed to get what they need to keep them happy. That's my take. That's fair. That's fair to them, you know. And even for front of the house, it's the same thing. If there are some team members that, and, you know, some managers, their thought is, I'm going to cut 4 hours from everyone. Like, how is that fair? How is that fair to the people that are working extra hard and you're cutting their hours, and the people that are working, they're lazy, then you're going to cut their hours exactly the same? You're going to lose the good people. You got to keep the good people happy. All you need is a couple of great people, and and they're going to help you succeed.
So, yeah, so I guess that's interesting that you and your managers, like, have that different perspective. What do you do to make sure that everyone's on the same page with, like, so how, sorry, let me, before we get into that, How big is your management team at right now?
Right now I have, amongst the three restaurants, probably like eight or nine managers, yeah.
So what do you do to kind of make sure everyone stays on the same page and is, you know, in line with how you operate and what your beliefs are?
Well, we have management meetings every week, and I say my piece. I don't like to, you know, what I learned is you have to be direct. Don't beat around the bush. But also, I give my managers, I let them try what they really think is what they really believe in, and they're gonna realize it happens often. I tell them, hey, this is my philosophy. I've gone through what you're going through, and this is my advice to you. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, also managers, most managers are very stubborn, right? It takes a special kind of grit and, like, stubbornness to do this job, right? Because it's not an easy job. So I understand that. So I tell them, okay, you can try it, but it's my job to also tell you what my thoughts are, right? Half a year or 1 year later, they go, all right, it didn't work. I'm like, it's okay. You know, you tried, and I had to learn the hard way too. So I think you need to have some sort of, like, grace as well, right? Like, people, managers need to be able to think for themselves too. If they only listen to what you say, they're just like, they're just followers. They have to be leaders. So you have to let them kind of do their own thing as well, as long as, you know, it's not breaking labor laws or, you know, the core things, right? That's really important. And just give them some grace when they fall.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's so important, especially, you know, I'm sure you have some very specific instances that this happened, right? But at the end of the day, as long as you have managers that, like, own up to it or are willing to see the light at the end, I think that's, like, the most important, right? That there was an actual we use this as a learning moment and not just a, like, oh, great, now this is just, we wasted money and now we're going to do this all over again. But as long as they learn something from it,
yeah,
then we're going to be okay on the other side, right? So how do your managers feel about having to run a little bit more lean and adapt to the situation right now?
For the most part, it's great. And my chefs are so happy to see me back in action. Like, they feel like they have way more clarity now, which is good, because, you know, when it's always like kitchen work is in, you know, in the trenches, it's in the kitchen. We can talk about plating all we want, but until you see me do it, until I tell you exactly in that moment, you know, let's change this, this is how I want it, you're not going to understand or understand fully unless I show it to you in person in the kitchen. So the kitchen morale is very high. I just, we're replacing our director of ops with a new hire, which is my cousin, and he has tons of FOH restaurant experience, and he started last week. So the energy, like, right now, like, we're riding this momentum. Like, a lot of things are getting done, a lot of small changes that's, like, adding up to, like, a big change.
Ooh, so there's a family dynamic kind of being inserted in. Is he the first family member to get involved?
Yeah, he actually helped me reopen during COVID, just him and I. So he knows the rest. He knows we've worked together in the past before.
Okay. Any concerns about, you know, that family dynamic?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, we've, like, we're best friends, and we talked about, I've always done kitchen work. He's always done front of the house work. We grew separately, and you know, he's managing restaurants. I'm managing kitchens, and I opened up multiple restaurants, and he was a managing partner at a restaurant, but that never really took off. And he realized, like, it's not just operation that matters, because he's an operation expert. You know, finding ways to generate revenue, events, building a team, like, his skill set is very important, but he thought that that alone could save a failing concept. But he realized after almost 5 years of being in that restaurant that it's in the same place. Like, it hasn't made any differences. So he believes so much in my concept that he wants to help it grow. So, and working with family is very tough. It's scary. It's scary because you don't want to ruin family relationships over business. You know, business is like, business could fail, right? Like, but family is like forever. You're bound by blood. So I'm really concerned. But it's also like, it takes a special kind of like, I guess relationship, because he knows me very well, and I know him very well. And I told him, look, man, like, you know, you coming in to help me out, I'm very grateful, and I'm so thankful. And if you ever feel at any moment you feel like this is not for you, just let me know. No problem. You know, we're gonna be cousins at the end of the day. We're family at the end of the day. So
you mentioned that you're pretty straightforward, right? Like, that's how you describe yourself. Where do you get that from? It seems to be really like helpful for you as a business owner. Like, you know, you're very clear with how you articulate things and you're very confident. I think that's very unique about you. I think that's part of kind of your brand. You're very confident. Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know if I'm super confident. Of course, I have my doubts and moments of like, you know, when I'm doubting myself. But I think being straightforward is you owe it to the other person, right? You wanna be fish. Like, I'm like, I don't want to beat around a bush to like tell you something that I know you need to hear that would be helpful to you, and it would be helpful to me. Like, we don't have to. To me, it's like we don't have to drag this on and go through loops and, you know, whatever, just to like kind of get to this point, but then it might be a little unclear. Then it did nobody, it's a disservice to you and to me. So obviously, you know, I don't say it bluntly, but I'll just say it how it is, and in a nice way, you know, still being kind. Yeah, it just comes from like wanting to respect the other person's time, and a lot of people overthink too, right? I think with me, people don't have to overthink. Like, I tell my team all the time, I'll never tell you something passive aggressively. I'll just tell you if I don't like it or I like it. And if I like it, I'm going to tell you straight up. So it's helpful because the mental health is important for all of us, right? And I think we've all worked in restaurants where with owners, general managers, or chefs, they're not really telling you anything, but now you're overthinking if you're like, wait, did I do that? Did I do something wrong or whatever, you know? It's like too much of this mind game.
Is there an instance in your past that this kind of relates to? Have you ever been on the reciprocating end of that?
No, I mean, I can't think of it one specific moment, but I think it's a pretty common thing.
Yeah, the mental health issue in kitchens, like, it's huge, right? I don't know. Do you see it? I definitely see it in my own kitchens, right? You're dealing with young people and they're going through a lot of mental health issues and they're trying to balance work. You know, they want to do a good job, but at the same time, they have their own demons. And back of house also does have, you know, that stereotype of like, abuse in certain areas, right? Whether it's drug, alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you find that you have to deal with that a bit in your business?
I mean, I think everyone will. Yeah, it's a stressful job, you know, working in the kitchen or working in a restaurant, working late hours. It's hectic, busy. It's hot, you know, or working with knives and pressure all the time. Yeah, I mean, I've dealt with it for a very long time. And strangely enough, I am in a very great mental health state once I became a business owner, because that's when I realized I have to make some big sacrifices if I want to make it in this industry. The lifespan is short. Chefs, if you want to work as an executive chef, you can't be on your feet when you're 60 years old, like for 14 hours, 16 hours a day. You're gonna burn out. You can't work on the line when you're 55 years old. Maybe you can, but do you really want to? Like, that's the question, right? Restaurants' average life is not very long, right? Like, you open up a new concept, the success rate in New York City or anywhere else in the world, it's not super high. So if you want to make it far, you need to have an advantage over your peers, but also if you need to take care of yourself physically and mentally so you have longevity in this industry. Because most of us are in it because we truly love food and hospitality. So if you want to do it, then you have to make some sacrifices, because eating whatever you want, drinking whatever you want, sleeping so little, going out partying, that's not helping your longevity. That's detrimental to your health. And I mean, a lot of people that know me know this. I'm completely sober for almost 5 years now.
Wow, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. January would be 5 years, because I used to drink a lot because I'm Korean and a chef. That's a double whammy, like horrible. So I would drink every day, like to the point where I wouldn't even get drunk from like 7 shots, couple beers. Like, it was nothing. Like, it just did nothing. And then I'll be like, oh, I'm gonna go eat a burrito, and then, you know, go to sleep like 30 minutes later. That's not good for you. So yeah, it's you gotta take
care. What made you? And I follow your Instagram, so I know you talk a lot about like self development and stuff. What was like the tipping point for you?
Oh, the tipping point was during COVID. I got so mad at my staff. We had this curfew. We couldn't serve alcohol past like 10 p.m. or something.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And my staff served the pitcher of beer at like 10:05. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I was so upset. So I just like, I yelled, I cursed, and then I was walking home after that, and I was so embarrassed. I was like, what am I doing? I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I was given this amazing opportunity to be a restaurant owner, which was my biggest dream as a cook. Now that I've achieved my dream, now I'm yelling at staff because they're serving beer during COVID. Like, they're here working hard with me. Like, I'm not the only one that's working hard. They're working hard too, and I'm yelling at them as if like they're here to like sabotage me, kind of thing. So I went home that night. It was December. I was like, you know what? I'm going to close my restaurant for January. I'm going to stop drinking for the month of January, reopen in February. And that's what I did. And I didn't know I was going to quit like this long. So I was just like counting, right? I'm like, oh, wow, I went 1 month without alcohol. Oh, my goodness. I'm like, all right, let's go one more month. And then I went one more month, and I'm like, wow, I feel great. Like, I feel amazing. Let me go one more month. And then after like 6 months, I just stopped counting. I don't even think about it anymore. It just became my lifestyle.
That's awesome. Did you find that had any impact on how you run the business, how you're a leader?
Yes. All of it. I think most people won't understand, because most people haven't been sober in their adult lives, in their 30s or you know, 40s. Because it just became so ingrained into our culture. You live for a weekend, you go out drinking, you know, happy hour, which is a big thing, midday, you know, hump day, weekend. So for me, and I'm not telling anyone to stop drinking, like, do whatever you want, right? Me, when I stopped, mental clarity, I woke up, no more hangovers, no brain fog. I was energetic. I had energy consistently throughout the day. No crashes. I started to feel lighter on my feet. I wouldn't, like, you know, tire out from a long day. I had energy for my family and my girlfriend then. She's my wife now. And I became less reactive and less emotional. Drinking, to me, it just made me feel like I was a victim to everything. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, when you go out to drink, most people, right? I don't know. Maybe this is my experience. After work, restaurant people, you go out drinking. You're not talking about like happy things. Most of the times, you're just complaining. You're just complaining all the time. Oh, this happened today. This sucked. Oh, did you see the chef? Oh, you know what? You know, he sucks. You're just complaining all the time, and you don't even know you're doing this. And all of a sudden, like, you do that for years. What are you doing? You're just became a professional complainer. But once I stopped being in an environment like that, I stopped looking at myself as a victim. I looked at myself, I have control over my actions. I'm going to take control of my life. Of course, I don't, you know, not everything's under my control. But whatever I could control, I'm going to control. What I can't, I'm not going to worry about. Because I used to be very, very anxious. Like, I couldn't sleep at night. During COVID, it was so bad. I would wake up in, like, middle of night, 2 a.m., just jumping out of bed, like, in cold sweats. Because I'm so worried that the business was going to close. You know, all these, like, crazy thoughts. I'm like, my neighbor's out to get me. There's someone trying to steal my packages, like from the riots and stuff. Like, this is what I was just worried about all the time. But once I stopped drinking, all those anxious thoughts, like, disappeared. All of it disappeared. So, of course, I have my moments, too. But for the most part, I'm very, like, I'm at peace for the most part. Way more now than then, yeah.
So, would you say this has contributed to your success now with being able to grow?
Yes. Yes, 100%. Because what kind of... All right, I'm a business owner. I'm trying to attract talent. People that are professionals, and it's a very competitive industry. Why would a chef, why would a manager, why would bar captains work at my restaurant for me or with me? What do I have? Who am I as a person? You don't want to work for someone that's like a crazy lunatic. You know what I mean? That's like highly emotional. They're all like, you know, they're throwing stuff every day, cursing left and right. Like, they show up late. They're bringing in their side chicks to, you know, to the bar. They're just being crazy. You know, so for me, if I'm at my best state, I'm loyal, compassionate, I'm a leader, I'm direct, I'm faithful, I'm a family guy, I take care of my staff, I treat my businesses with respect, I take care of my, you know, I'm always friendly and hospitable to our guests. I represent myself the best way I can. I'm going to attract people that see that and want to work with me or work for me. That, you know, so at the end of the day, you're only going to attract who you are. You're a psychopath, you're going to probably attract psychopaths.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
You know, you have integrity. Okay, people are going to want to work with you.
Yeah, if you're going to be shady, other people are going to be shady and do those shady things around you as well. Often people talk about how important consistency is in restaurants, right? Like, but often it's talked about in like a customer experience setting. Right, like the menu, like the food has to come out the same. But I mean, at a leadership level, we also have to be consistent.
Yes.
For our employees, right? So if we're not consistent, you know, like they're also going to be anxious and jumpy, and they're also going to have these good and bad days and victim mentality. And I have dealt with this as well with like hiring other employees. You really do attract just what you put out there. Right. If you're putting out, you know, certain vibes, that's the word I'm going to use.
Yeah.
You're going to get those vibes right back.
Yes, absolutely.
For the future of your business, what's the goal?
You know, I thought about this. My goal was open up 50. That was my goal. But it's, for me now, it's kind of like I want to open up one more concept, maybe two more, but I don't have a timeline on that.
Okay. Different ones from No One?
Yeah, different ones. Maybe like more of like an upscale, not fine dining, but maybe more of like an upscale concept. No One attracts a lot of like, it's for, you know, the mid-20s, late-20s, early-30s kind of like crowd. Maybe I want, as I'm getting older, I want to cook food that's more geared towards like what I would want to eat. Like I ate No One food. That's all I ate when I created the concept, right? I don't eat that every day anymore. And I want to, you know, open up a new concept that I'm really passionate about. Vegetables, protein, simple dining, you know.
Okay.
A slightly bigger table. You're not too crammed in. Music doesn't have to be, you know, ringing. Like it's a little toned down. Still sexy, still, you know, the vibes are right, but, you know, you're not, like, in a party scene.
It's interesting because your personal life also recently changed, right? You had a child?
Yeah, I did.
Does that change how you operate and kind of like your priorities?
Yeah, so when I wanted to open up like 50 restaurants, that's just like a number I thought of like 3 years ago or over 2 years ago. But once I had my daughter, I'm like, wow, I don't want to miss out on time with her. So if I have to travel all the time for work, I'm going to be missing out on so much, and that's really sad to me. So also, like, opening up businesses, like, I'm asking myself, like, why do I want to keep doing it? Of course, I want to keep challenging myself, but challenging myself could be in different ways too, right? I think the main thing is, like, challenge yourself in different ways in every aspect of your life. It shouldn't just be business. It should be health. It should be family. It should be, you know, quality time with your spouse. It could be with, you know, academy. It could be you studying. It could be spiritual. Like, you should be challenging yourself in all different aspects of your life. It doesn't have to be only business. So before, I was thinking priority was business because I wanted to, as a man in our culture, you provide for your wife. So that's what I was really focused on. I'm like, I have to make sure my restaurants are successful so my wife doesn't have to worry about finance, so I can take care of our family, future family with a baby, and we could live like comfortably. But now, with 2 restaurants, 3 restaurants, I'm okay. You know, so, and also money's like, it comes and goes. Like, what amount of money will be enough? You ask anyone, like, you're never going to be satisfied. You know what I mean? If you keep chasing money, you're never going to be satisfied. So, and time, you can't put price on time. If I lose out on the early years of my daughter's life, her childhood, I can't get that back. And I want to make sure that I'm there for her. So now I'm thinking, like, okay, New York City, focus on what I have, make sure I'm home, spend time with my family, and if another opportunity comes where I can manage, that I'm going to go for it. That's kind of like where I'm at right now.
I love that. I am actually in the exact same boat, and it's amazing how a little human can really change the course of your business and the future, right? I think a lot of us have to look at what is success, right? I also felt like opening as many concepts as possible, as many locations as possible, like, was a definition of success. I think it's just like ingrained in, like, in our industry, like collecting all the restaurants that you possibly can and having this really cool portfolio. But, and I'm the happiest when my restaurant is full and I get to talk to customers. Like, why do I need more than that? And then when I go home, I'm happy as well. It's like, I already have everything I want. Just like you have so much to be grateful for. And sometimes we just have to, like, pause and think about all the good that we do have and really take care of what we have right now, right? Make sure our businesses are profitable. We're dealing with one challenge after another. And like you said, running lean. Like, I think we should be running lean pretty much all the time, no matter what, right? Your business can't survive without profit.
Yes.
And we can't take care of our customers. We can't take care of our people. And before we actually opened the podcast up and started recording, you mentioned you actually use the Frylo. So I really wanted to touch on that before we end off on this. So, you know, I also use the Frylo, and that actually had nothing to do with me hosting this podcast. It was pure coincidence. So the fact that you also use it is, I think, hilarious. Tell me about your experience with it. For anyone that's listening.
Yeah, I started using Frylo during COVID. Well, my old chef put me on it, my old chef Dale Taldi. And, you know, oil prices went up like crazy during COVID and people didn't want to spend money, right? So I'm like, oil prices went up from $18 for the 35 gallon jug up to, like, I want to say $60. It almost tripled.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, I can't just start charging more for tater tots and, you know, like, fried chicken. All right, let me look. And my chef told me, hey, use this. You could extend your fire life. Fry it at a lower temperature. Food's a little less greasy. You're going to be fine. I tried it out. It was, you know, it wasn't cheap. You know, each one cost like over $1,000. But I'm like, you know what? Let me try it. After I tried it, he was right. My food was coming out great. I was able to save money. My fryer oil lasted longer. So I used it in all of my restaurants, all three restaurants.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nice. How do you find having to maintain it? What's any challenges with maintaining it, making sure it's clean?
Well, we strain and clean out our fryer every night. And then every, like once a week, we'll boil out the Frylo, just using the instructions that, it's fine. It lasted many, many years.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. It's funny because it is an investment, right? And like, but in the long term, right, if you actually like know your numbers, you're like, okay, I'm actually saving like thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you're saving money.
Right. But I think it's hard for certain people, you know, if they're in a state of like losing money as it is already, it's hard to like make that jump. So, you know, hopefully if someone's listening to this and they're like, I don't know if I should do it, hopefully they take our advice. What do you guys deep fry the most of?
Tater tots, fried chicken, and our rice cakes. We fry so much of those.
So you deep fry your rice cakes, eh?
We deep fry it and then we cook it in a wok right after. So it's crispy and then we, yeah.
Okay, so but traditionally they're not deep fried, right?
No. There's difference. We serve tteokbokki different styles. The one in the red sauce that's like slowly cooked, that's not deep fried.
Okay.
But we have rice cakes on skewers, which are deep fried and crispy, and then it's glazed with like a sweet and spicy sauce. So you could deep fry it. You don't have to deep fry it. We deep fry ours.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
I had no idea you could do that.
But make sure you don't deep fry for too long because it'll explode in there.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Thanks for the disclaimer.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, you know, let's do like kind of a little bit of a takeaway. If you could tell someone that wants to open up a restaurant, you know, what are like maybe three things that you think they should know or avoid? What are some like three lessons that you'd give to someone that's just opening up?
Three lessons. Keep it simple. Don't complicate it. Keep the menu simple. Focus on what you're really confident and great at. Number two, understand finances. Rent should be 10% of your revenue. Just think of it like that. So if you're looking for a real estate space, do the math. Can you actually do this X amount of revenue per year? Break it down and break that down. Divide that by 52. Can I do this per week in 7 days, right? And then three, be prepared. Whatever you think it's going to be, you know, one, let's say in difficulty of opening a business, restaurant business, maybe you'll say, oh, it can't be that hard. Multiply that by 10. It'll be that hard. So you need to be prepared because it'll be better for you to be pleasantly surprised if it's running well than be shocked when it's getting that hard.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they just expect that it's going to be bumping and things are going to go their way. Oh yeah, I'm going to open it. People are going to love it. And they don't prepare for like the what ifs, you know, what if no one comes in for like a month? What if COVID happens? Like, right. I didn't open thinking COVID was going to happen. I wouldn't have done it. Maybe I still would have, maybe I would have changed things, but like, you know, people don't think about the, what if, you know, my house is on the line, because often people are taking out these massive loans to open their businesses. And the rent thing, so important. When I talk to someone that's struggling, I'm like, what do you pay for rent? And they tell me, and I'm like, okay, so like you have to actually do X amount of sales. They're like, and you see the reaction in their face change. You're like, okay, we have a problem. We need to fix it. And that's where it comes down to the concept. So number one, keep it simple. Like, you know, how many items do you have on your menu, by the way?
Maybe like 16.
Yeah,
like
okay.
Food items,
keep it simple,
16.
Super simple.
Less than 20.
Right? We don't need 200 like item menus, right? Those are of the past.
That's of the past.
Yeah. Amazing. My second last question for you here is, if you could have a lifetime supply of one item that you currently buy free of charge, or just like a shipping container shows up, what would that item be?
For life?
Yep. Yeah. Our lifetime supply.
Our burger patties.
Really?
Our burger patties. We go through, oh my gosh, I don't even know, oh my gosh, like 30 cases, no, more than 30 cases of beef per week. So if, and beef is not a cheap ingredient, if I can get that for free, I don't have to ever work for the rest of my life.
So true. So it's funny because the answers are always very, they're very interesting and very telling of people, I find. Last thing is, can you let our listeners know if they want to find you, want to learn more about your business, what's the best way to reach you? How can they find you?
Yeah, so my restaurants, Noon, we're located in New York and Boston. Our website's noonusa.com and our Instagram is noon.usa. You can find me on Instagram, yo.jlee, yo.jaelee, and also my website, chefjlee.com.
Awesome. Jay, your Instagram content is on point. I don't know if that's you doing it or if you've got like a mystery person, but it's like, it's really
good.
So I've been following along with all your stuff. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time to talk to me. And I hope that we've reached some restaurant owners out there. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Yeah. Likewise. Great catching up. Thank you, Susan.
Great catching up. Bye, Jay. Have a good day.
Bye, everyone. Bye.